And when they're home and wanting to separate from you, it's not fun. It's not a good time most of the time. One of the things you need to do, and I teach parents this all the time, you've got to stop controlling, you got to stop telling them what to do, and you got to negotiate. You have to start treating your teenager as a thinking being with respect. I'm not saying they shouldn't respect you, but as I said in the talk that I did for the church, there's a commandment that was missed. We're very clear about the commandment of honor thy father and mother. But God left out an 11th commandment, and it should have been honor thy children. They are beings. We were once children. Children are just little human beings growing up. They're not our property, and we need not to control them. And when they get to be 11, 12, and 13, even earlier, I started doing that with my stepson. I started working with him. About 8, 9, I started sending him out and saying, if you come back at this time, then you get this, and if you don't come back at this time, then you get this. And by the time he was a teenager, he was so responsible, he came in to his mother and I, and he said, I really hate you guys. I said, why? He says, I'm so damn responsible. Mothers love me going out with their sons to hang out because they know we'll be back on time. You did this to me. He says, I'm going to do something really bad. He says, maybe, you know, you're going to make a call some night of me doing something really bad. And I'd say, well, I hope you're not hurt when you do it. I'll be there when it happens, and I love you. And he just kind of walked out. But it's like we need to talk to our adolescents as beings and set up what we want from them. Is there a parent here who does not want their adolescent to grow up to be a functional, responsible, appropriate, judgment-oriented human being? Good. Good. When they raise their hands, I give my cards out immediately. The deal is, we are not controlling them. If you control them, what kind of adult are they going to turn out to be? Do you really believe you're going to control them till they're 18 and off to college and they're going to go out into the world and be fine? That they're going to be great, functioning human beings? This child to adult middle ground is a trial and error time. They're trialing out their egos, their sense of self, their image with the community. But also, you are getting them ready to be an adult. I look at you like, yeah, right. Teenagers hate to be reading something or talking to a friend and have a parent come in and say, I told you to take the trash out. Why didn't you take it out? Would you do that to your spouse? Your spouse is on the phone to her best woman friend. Or if your spouse was sitting there watching the Super Bowl, probably a guy, right? Would you walk in before halftime or before a commercial and demand that they get up out of their chair and go do something? They'd look at you like you had rocks in your head. Why? Because it's disrespectful of the adult. It's disrespectful of the person. Why do you do it to your teenager? They hate it because it's disrespectful of how they think of themselves. They're not there yet, but how they think of themselves as an adult. Because they are now thinking, analytical. I had a teenager come in and said, 16 years old, says, yeah, I was shaving in the mirror. Says, my father did not like it. I said, why? He says, he just couldn't believe that I could be shaving. And worse, I tell him my opinion, he doesn't want to hear it. I said, why do you think? He says, he doesn't think I have an opinion. He says, I think. I look at things. And he doesn't want to hear it. If we get caught thinking our children are still a child, then we control and then we work with them like they're 8 and 9, and it won't work. It won't work. We have to negotiate with them. And what that means is, in industrial literature, psychologists know, and those of you who are employers or supervisors know, if you talk to your supervisees about the goals that have to be established, about the work that has to be done, and the consequences if it's not done, if they agree with those consequences, if they work with you on what those consequences are, what we find in the literature is, people will take their consequences if they had some input into the consequences that would happen. Teenagers know when they mess up. We really don't have to tell them. So, if you want your teenager home by a certain time, I mean, let's realize them. Things are curfew, school, and, you know, well, curfew and school are pretty much the big ones. I don't know a teenage family doesn't fight over that. You want your teenager home at a certain time? Negotiate with them. They want to go to a party. They want to stay out till 4 in the morning. That's ridiculous, especially if they're mid-adolescent. But coming home at 11:30 is just as ridiculous. Compromise and negotiate with them. You would with your spouse. If your husband or wife is leaving in the morning and you don't know when they're coming home and you've got something going on, you know, we got this thing going on at 4. Oh, yeah, I'll be home at 2. Well, no, could you be home at 3? Because da-da-da. Oh, okay, let's make it 3. We compromise all the time in negotiating relationships. That's what it is. Do you not have a relationship with your teenager? Or do you want one? If you want one, negotiate. You want to be home at 4? No, that's out of the question. But 11:30, Mom? Okay, yeah, 11:30, that's out of the question. Okay, what's reasonable to you? Well, I'd like to come home at 2. It doesn't work for me very well either. And negotiate it. All right, what happens if you're not home at 1? We've agreed to 1. Now what happens? What happens if you're not home? Well, what do you mean if I'm not home? Yeah, well, there's consequences. My stepson hated the word consequences. I never use grounding. I use consequences. He hated that. He says, you talk to me about consequences one more time, I'm going to hit you. I said, I understand that. And you have to hold the consequences. In his mid-adolescence, he was going to school, and he was not doing well. And we negotiated. I said, your job is to go to school. My job is to pay the bills. Your mom's job is this. Everybody's got a job in a family. Don't you want to raise them to understand jobs and consequences and rewards? Isn't that what life's about? We work, we get rewards. The more responsible we are, the more freedoms we get. The less responsible we are, the less freedoms we get. That's the deal. That's what life is. That's what we do out there every day. Why not do it in your home? The deal is, he wasn't doing well. I said, okay, what are we going to do about this? He said, well, I'll just do better. I said, no, you haven't been doing better. We tried that. See, I believe in letting them hang themselves. You know, we rush in there and say, you didn't do this and you're not going to do this, so this is what we're going to do to you. And they go, yeah, right. I say, okay, you think you can do this? Fair enough, show me you can do it. I'll give you a short amount of time to show me you can pull this out, and then we'll talk. The short amount of time happens, they don't do it. The thing that is I love to do with adolescents, and it's going to sound terrible because until I explain it, you're going to look at me like I'm out to lunch. I kind of shame them in a nice way. What I say to them is, you know, you said you'd be home at 1 o'clock, and you didn't come home at 1. It's like, I guess you're not old enough to handle this. You know, I thought you were adult enough to say, I'm a man of my word. You're going to be home at 1, you'll be home at 1. I thought, you know, we had a relationship here where I could trust you with what you say. You lied. You can't do it. You're showing me you're not old enough. They look at you like you have just kicked them in the stomach. The worst thing an adolescent wants to hear is they're not moving along the adult line. That they're back as a child. You're telling them they're a child. They hate that. But they know you're right. Because the proof is they didn't get home on time. They didn't handle it. You don't have to yell. You don't have to beat walls. You don't have to raise your voice. Once you negotiate, you just stay with the negotiation. I want to stay up till 12 o'clock at night. Well, on a school night, that's pretty late. Think you can handle that? Yep. You can get your homework done, get your stuff done, ready for bed, go to bed at 12, get up at 5:30 or 6, whatever you have to do. You bet I can do that. Because I'm not going to get you out of bed. You have to set your own alarm and you have to get out of bed. I can do it. Okay. Parents rush in and say, you can't do that. You know you won't get up in the morning. You know you'll be sleepy. I'll have to get you out of bed. And then all of a sudden, you're right there. Telling them they can't do it. Boy, tell an adolescent they can't do it. See what happens. I let them mess up. Don't you do that with employees? They say, I can get this done on time. Okay, show me you can do it. You don't do it, you don't get a raise. You do it, you get a promotion. Or something in the middle of that sort. Do the same thing with your teens. Okay, go to bed at 12. We'll see what happens. They don't get out of bed on time. They crawl to the breakfast table. You know, they're slurring their speech. They're barely able to get to school. I look at them and say, God, I'm so sorry. You know, obviously you're not old enough to be able to handle 12 o'clock. So I guess we'll have to go a little earlier. Well, what do you mean a little earlier? Well, 11. Well, I don't want to go to bed. Too bad. We'll do a short period of time at 11 o'clock, and then somewhere in about a month we'll do 12 o'clock again. You show me you can do it, I'll let you do it. Isn't that what adults are about? Show me you can do it, and go do it. We want them to be, I tell them, be a person of your word. Do what you say you're going to do. Be responsible enough to handle it. Take on the emotional responsibility and physical responsibility of it, and I'll let you have it. You get your grades done. You take yourself to bed. You get yourself up in the morning. I'll let you run your own show. What am I going to lose? They're going to get good grades. They're going to go to a good college. They're going to get up on time. I don't have to hassle with them. I don't lose. I believe parents should win-win. It's like telling a two-year-old. You can have, the two-year-old says, you got to say to a two-year-old, you have to take a bath. They go, what? I don't want to take a bath. Okay, fine. Here's the deal. You can take a bath before dinner. You can take a bath after dinner. Oh, okay, I'll take a bath after dinner. Choices. Isn't that what life's about? Options? Give your adolescent options within your framework. I'm not talking about give up control. What I am talking about is negotiate within your framework of what's real in life. And then let them meet the challenge. Negotiate with them. They're not stupid. They're not children. They are not people who don't want to succeed. They're not out there to fail. They will fail if that means they can succeed at getting out of your control. The first thing we see go with an adolescent is school. Why? They can control it. We can't make them do their homework. We can't make them take a test. We can't make them be smart at the test. We can't make them get a good grade. They can control it every time. Every time. So what's the deal? The deal is, school's your job. As a functioning member of this household, that's what you do. You have to get at least this standard of grade. That's your job. But if you say, you've got to do this and you've got to do that, it's amazing how quick those D's and F's come. It's amazing. No, I'm doing fine in school. Then the progress report comes. A D in gym? Well, my locker got locked. I couldn't get my gym clothes out. You know, it's like, what could I? I have a teenager in LA. Just Tuesday, we did this. She has been a pain in her father's butt. She is 15 years old. She gets D's. She came in the other day. I've been working with her father because he's an enraged personality, and that's why she is so much trouble. He has been blaring in her face with rage her whole life. She comes in and she says, I said, so how you doing? She said, you know, I got C's or better in every class except gym. I said, what happened? She said, I got an F. I said, what happened? She said, well, you know, my locker got locked. I couldn't get to the... And that's another thing about peers. If you had a woman friend or a man friend who had another friend you didn't like, would you just go up to them? I mean, you might, but would you just go up to them if you really cared about them and say, that person is nuts. You are crazy to be with them. If you're going to be with that person, I don't know if I want to see you again. A friend would look at you, and I'm talking about a long-term friend. They look at you like, all right, what's the matter? What's going on? Come on, it can't be about the friend. You never talk to me this way. My stepson had a friend who was doing drugs. I knew it. I grew up in the 60s. I know what that looks like. And I said to him, that's what I said to him when he said, how do you know? I said, I grew up in the 60s. I know what that looks like. I said, you may want to be his friend. I'm going to tell you why I don't like him. Is there anyone who believes you should just tell him, you can't see him anymore? Now, if they're jumping off of bridges or they're running in front of cars, yeah, maybe you may want to do that. But you need to talk to this person. Parents think, just because I'm a parent, you got to do it. Wouldn't it be nice to tell them why you feel that way? They need an explanation just like you would. They need explanations. They may not like the explanation, but at least they get an understanding of why. How many times you had a teenager say, why? And you go, because I'm your parent. What I said to my stepson was, don't make me be your parent like that. Don't make me play the hard guy. And that's what I mean by stepping out of it. I respond to their reactions. He responds the way he's supposed to, I'm right there telling him how great he is. He responds like he's not supposed to, and we've already decided what the consequence is. We have decided what the consequence is. It happens. And for those of you who say, yeah, right, sure, I'll give you another example. At 16, my stepson's best friend, now we're talking the ego is with friends. You know the Three Musketeers deal? It was one of his buddies that was a Three Musketeers. 16th birthday. He had this, my stepson had this thing where he wasn't doing well in school, and I said, every Friday you bring home a progress report. If that progress report is good, you get Friday night, you get the weekend. If that progress report is not good, we did Friday night and Saturday, you have to stay home. I did it that way because I didn't want to kill the whole weekend. Again, no hope. So I took away part of it. He tested me. He came home knowing his best friend's 16th birthday was that Saturday night. He came home with an outrageously bad report. I said, and you don't have to, that's what I want to take you out of. You don't have to get angry. You don't have to scream and yell. You just say, God, I'm really sorry. I am really sorry you did this to yourself. You see, having them own their consequence, own their actions more. I'm sorry you did this to yourself. I know that you want to go to this party. And I know how important it is to you. And I'm really sorry you took it away from you. Because we negotiated what would happen. You knew it would happen. Why did you do this? See, parents are so quick to jump on the consequence, they forget to ask their adolescent, why are they acting that way? We want to control and demand and consequence that behavior instead of saying, you know what you did, we're going to have to punish, but why did you do it? As a person, why are you doing this? I want to understand you. Why are you doing this? Well, you just want to punish me. No, I don't. And if you show them by action that punishment is the second thing on your mind, it's like if your teenager came home and said they were in a car accident, the first thing you want to say is, you're not going to use the car anymore? No, you say, are you okay? You're concerned about their well-being first and the consequence second. Do that all the time. So I said to my stepson, you can't go. I'm sorry you took this away from you. He said, yeah, I know I can't go. And that was it. I was at he was on a soccer team. I went to the soccer meeting the next week. And his other best friend, the other third Musketeer's mother, came up to me and said, I can't believe you didn't let him go to that party. She said, I really respect you. She said, I couldn't have done that. I would have let him go. The issue there is, how many of your employees, if you tell them there's a consequence, and then don't give them the consequence, are going to take you seriously? We as parents set consequences, and then we go, God, I don't want to do that to them. You're not doing it to them. They did it to themselves. Get off the hook of your teenager's behavior. Let them be on the hook for it, and you can have a nice ride. Then you don't have to give up control. But you can control the situation.
Is that something that set up when you're a child that you go into that? Can you begin right now and do that?
Yes and yes. The deal is, right on time, we'll go for questions. The deal is, it would be much better. I started doing it with my stepson when he was 7 and 8. He'd take his little friend, he'd go to the park, and I said, okay, in a half hour or an hour, you have to be back. And I'd say, here's a little watch, you know, the big hands on here, little hands on here. It was safe to go. He went to the park, he came back late. I said, I'm really sorry. You're not old enough to handle this. Boy, he looked like he would just die. And the next time, boy, he was home 5 minutes early. So yes, it's better if you start early. But yes, it can happen. But again, you must remember, nobody changes overnight. If you've been locked in a control battle, your teenager isn't even going to trust that you're out of it. Why should they? You've been grounding them and yelling at them and controlling. Why do they think all of a sudden you start being negotiative with them? They're going to go like, what's going on with mom? What's happening here? Something's going on. So it takes time. And certainly when you're starting that, and if then they're in, let's say, the middle adolescence, certainly a therapist is helpful. A lot of what I do is I start with adolescents, because for me, and I taught this at Cedars-Sinai Medical Center in outpatient psychiatry, I taught therapists, psychiatrists, social workers, psychologists, how to gain an alliance with an adolescent. Because when parents bring kids into us, the kids go, oh, great, another adult who's going to fix us and tell us we're bad. And I get out of that in a heartbeat. I'm out of that in the first session. That's what I taught. So what I do first is I gain an alliance with the adolescent, not with the parent. Parents are old enough to handle things. They can handle things. The kid needs some adjunct help. So I align with them first. And one thing I do is I never meet with the parent alone once I meet with the teenager, if it's about teen issues. Because they're sure you're plotting against them in the room. And they are. That's what they think. Because they don't trust you. I look at a teenager and say, I don't expect you to trust me. They dragged you in here. I don't expect you to trust me. And I worked with tough kids. I worked my first years working with adolescents. I was working in placement centers for Department of Social Service, kids who couldn't live at home, and probation kids. And then I went to group homes and group home parents. And I did a thing called Project Heavy, which is court-referred therapy, when instead of going to jail, they came to therapy. So I've dealt with all kinds of adolescents. And for those of you who may have come here for talks on ADD and drug abuse and those things, I know about it, but I wanted to give a more broad, typical introduction to adolescence in general here today. I don't know, Bill, we'll have to talk about that. I wasn't going to be talking about it tonight. I can talk about ADD. I've worked with kids who are ADD. I almost raised one in therapy. He came to me from when he was 11 to 20 almost, huh? Maybe. We might do a forum or something. I don't know if I'm not a specialist in that, so I don't know if I'd have a whole hour of that. But yeah, I can give a lot of talks about, you know, the issues of ADD and what that looks like. And some of the meds they're using now and things like that. So I would use a therapist to start that off. I'd get an alliance going with a teenager, have them feel that I'm on their side and I know what's going on and understand. And then what I do, as I've asked you to all do, I ask them when they want the parent in. I said, this is your session. When do you feel you want your parent to come in? Well, I don't want them in here. That's the first thing I get. I don't want them in here. I go, well, yeah, I understand that, but don't you want this to improve? Don't you want that to improve? Well, yeah. Well, aren't they the ones who are going to improve it or not with you? Well, yeah. So when do you think you might want them in? I don't know right now. Okay. And a couple of weeks later, I'll ask again. I'm not giving up. The parents will be in there. But it will be within their timing and my timing. I want them in now. They don't want them in at all. Negotiation starts. It's really what it's about. And at some point, I get the parent in there. And I tell them, I will help you, the teenager, talk to your parent and have your parent understand. So let's move to some other questions. Anyone have questions? Yeah. That's the good and the badness. It's very tough. What you can be is that person they may remember as someone who did respect, understand, and honor them in certain ways. But like working with especially gangster kids, you can have them an hour a week in therapy, but if you can't get into that system, they go home to that system. And that system is around them and wrapped on them until they go to school the next morning. And there is nothing you can do to change that. So if they know that when they come to school, there is a person there who gives them something different. We all have mentors. There are people we remember in our lives, teachers, supervisors, whatever, who are mentors in our life. Work to be one of those. Feel the empathy of the fact that you know the home they go home to, and there's not a whole lot you can do about that. You know, it's like I work with a lot of couples, and especially, but also people, parents who are divorced, and having to work with a parent who knows that the spouse they divorced is not doing well with their kid at home, and then they have to deal with the fallout when the child comes back to their home. And I look at them and I say, there's nothing you can do. They have custody rights. And you can't blame yourself. You know, the worst you can do is just think about the bad choice you made and you weren't conscious of that at the time. And now you learned and you got away from that person and you've got a solid home for that child to come home to. But there's nothing you can do about that spouse who doesn't treat that kid well. They have custody rights, and as long as it's not abusive or neglectful in ways that we can do something about, we have to learn. You know, I do this with couples, too. You know, we have to learn to be helpless with people. You know, one of the getting out of the codependency thing is not feeling that we have to take care of others, and we can't. And what I teach couples is to be, especially men, you know, we're brought up to be fix it, take care of it, handle it, and if we can't handle it, then we're not being good. And, I mean, I had a couple the other morning. The guy said, he says, I want to help her. I want to help her. I said, well, what do you want to do? She's an adult. How are you going to help her? He thought love was help. And she was feeling disrespected. And you help them work on that. But you have to feel helpless with people sometimes. This is a tough helplessness. There's nothing you can do. And I'm thrilled that with 150 kids, you want to try. You know, God bless you. Okay. I'm not even sure it's realistic at times. I mean, I have kids who say they've got to get a major the first day of school. Well, if I remember, if the colleges are still doing it the way you used to do it, you don't have to clear a major until your third year. What's the rush? As long as you get your general ed stuff done and your prerequisites and your undergraduate, your lower division courses, who cares what major you pick? You know, again, it's a day, you know, it's almost like the kind of the serenity issue. It's like day to day. If a teenager is doing their job, you can work with projective goals with your employees and your supervisees, but the deal is day to day. What have you done today? With adolescents, it's what did you do today? Did you get your homework done? Really, it is. Not, and I don't mean it stupid. But it isn't appropriate. Appropriate is, what are you going to do? Well, you talk to a kid about college, and he goes, you know, my parents don't care about education, or they're uneducated, or they don't have the money for education, or they're divorced, and they can't, you know. Let's deal with reality. You know, I think that's a good point. I think if we can instill responsibility, what's your job? How do you complete it? How are you responsible? When I look at teenagers, in fact, I was working with a girls' group home, and when I left, they gave me a card, because I always said, take care of business. And they had the song on when I left, Taking Care of Business. It's what I say. Be a person of your word and take care of business. That's really what we want to teach them. Here's the freedoms for doing it, and here's the consequences when you don't. When you have a model situation, or working toward a model situation.
I assume you were talking, for example, about a situation where a kid goes home, the family dynamics, they can't get into the family, and there's a certain sense of hopelessness around the intervention.
Mm-hmm.
When you do get the intervention, things are working.
Yes.
How does it look different? What do you notice begins to shift?
There's more respect. Respect isn't a right, it's earned, both sides. There's gentleness. You know, I mean control battles. They are nasty battles. I've seen some things going on with parents and kids that just make me shudder. It's like, this has got to be one of the most painful things you've got going in your life. Not just the teenager. The parent's in agony. All they see is like, it's like, how did I become this ogre? How did I become this person who yells and screams consequence? The place where that's probably an appropriate agony is with ADD kids. I've got a couple now I'm working with who have an ADD kid. It's real tough because they're not normal. The hardest thing for the mom to realize is, because she's a controller, she is a mega controller, and she does not want to believe this kid is not normal. And so they are lost. But in normal families, people, instead of doing this, they start doing this and then this. And I'm not saying it's going to be, you know, Ozzie and Harriet, that's from my day, the Brady Bunch for other people. You know, I'm not saying that. I'm not talking about, oh, we're going to all go romping through the tulips together. I'm talking about a homeostatic home where we all like living there. That's my goal with teens and parents. So it's gentle. You had a question. Did you still? Are they over 18? Oh, okay. No. I don't believe in hours at that point. At 18 and 23, they're old enough. The deal is that we are now kind of like roommates, and there are rules that we all have to live by that will make us feel okay in this home. So certain partying and certain bringing people home and certain maybe thumping around at certain late hours in the morning wakes me up. It's not okay. You can come home at 4 in the morning, but be quiet. But after 18, your job's done. Who they are is who they are by about 13 or 14. But you still got a job. But your job's done at 18. And they'll tell you so. And so what you need to do is say, as a person, as a woman, here's how I want to live in my home. If you don't like living in my home, you can live somewhere else. You're old enough to do that now. So here's the compromise, or here's the negotiation that we're going to make, because I want you to live at home. Obviously, you can't make it on your own right now, or you're going to school, and I want to help you out. So I want you to live at home. But this has got to stop, because this makes me nuts, and I can't live with it. And you have a right to say that. It's your home. You are the adult who made that happen. They will go out and make it happen for them and their families. So I like to say, again, a homeostatic home. I really believe in that. It's not about control. It's about peace. I didn't get this old to want to live in chaos with you. You know? Yeah, Maren. Okay. Well, wait a minute. Okay. You said that you got here and you got here and you got here. Never would have gotten even here. It's here. And if they do it, they get to go here. And they don't get to go here until they do it. Yes. And we need to remember that. Thank you. Right. You know, I hear you. No, you bring up a good point. First of all, the one thing I want to ask you all to remember is your adolescence. And before we stop, I have down here, I'd like you to rent the movie Breakfast Club. It's a Howard Hughes production. Breakfast Club was put out maybe 10 or 15 years ago. It's a wonderful expose of adolescent stereotype groups and how they think about each other. We need to remember that. And what happens is there are five adolescents who have to go to a delinquent after-hours thing on Saturday morning because they all screwed up for one reason or another. But they're all the stereotype. There's the jock. There's the one who's outside. There's the nerd. There's the gangster. There's the real princess. They're all there. And they vie against each other at first. So you get to see what that looks like. And then around the middle of the movie, they sit down and really talk about who they are and what it's like. And that's really important. But in your situation, I don't know a teenager who knows they can make it truly on the street. I don't know a teenager who says, I'm packing my bag because I want to go out there. I don't want an allowance anymore. I don't want you to feed me anymore. I'll get my own clothes. I'm out of here. It isn't so. They want to stay. And they will stay as long as it's a viable place to stay. So I would sit down with my teenager and I would really, again, person to person, from all the love I have for that child or that teenager, I would say, what? What is going on? I am miserable with you. I don't think you like me. I'm not thrilled with who you are, but I love you to death. And we can't live like this. What can we do? Work, again, the negotiation of homeostatic home. What can we do? That's what I would do. I would appeal. You didn't stay home because it probably was a terrible place, or your dad was real controlling, and you didn't want to. Okay. Again, you try to control an adolescent, they're going to sabotage their life. Simple. It's like arithmetic. 2 + 2 = 4. You control them, they're out the door. You give them an environment that they can feel safe. Nah, they already feel safe. Give them an environment that their egocentricities can work in, within your framework again, because it's your home, that's negotiated, they'll stay. They'll still mess up, you know, they'll cut school once in a while, and they'll mess up on curfew, and they won't call you, and they'll make you worry. And once they might come home having had some alcohol at a party, and that's because that's a teenager. That's what it is. But there isn't a teenager I know who says, I'm out of here, I want to go to work, I want to buy my own clothes, I'm going to buy my own food, because I don't want you taking care of me anymore. And if I have to walk uphill twice because I don't have a car, that's okay. I don't know a teenager who wants that. They will leave only if they must. Teenagers on the street are there because they can't live at home. Molested, abused, battered, beaten, whatever. They can't live at home. The middle ground is, I don't like living at home, and I'll stay out as often as I can. Okay, one... Go ahead, Ken.
Continuing on with your statement, are you saying also that, I mean, are you saying that when you negotiate consequences and deals with a kid, and the kid doesn't live up to their end of the bargain...
Most of the time.
...you start negotiating tougher consequences, and then if they still blow you off and say, and you negotiate tougher consequences, but you tell your... Yeah, how tough do the consequences get? Where do you finally draw the line? So wait a minute, this is not working. You don't care about the consequences anymore.
When you're at that point, probably you need to call in a therapist because something isn't working and there needs to be some shifts. But I really believe in that old adage, the time should fit the crime. And you need to negotiate with them. And when they say, you know, well, I stayed out all night and I shouldn't have to go, I'll stay home Friday night. It's like, oh, no. Let's back up. You caused me worry. I was heartsick. I didn't know what was happening. You pissed me off. You didn't respect my limits. You threw it in my face. This is not just a Friday night. And they understand that because they're not stupid. But if it gets to where nothing works and nothing works, then you need to bring in a professional because something's not going right. And it can shift. It can all shift. There was one more question and then we'll stop.
No, it's along the same line.
Okay. See, what happens when, and then I'll take your question. What happens is that when it gets to that point where it goes further and further and further along, what's happening is there's some kind of control thing and you're still vying for control and power. You can't win. Control and power, forget it. Throw it out the window with adolescence. Not a deal. Not part of the negotiation. If you can come from, this is a chaotic individual who I love and I'm really heartfelt for because of what's happening, and we have to live in a peaceful home, that's a place to negotiate from. They don't know what to do with that, by the way. You tell them, I want to live in a peaceful home. I don't like this. They look at you like, all right, what's the deal here? Come on, what's the consequence? What's happening? This has got to be a left-handed pitch. Because they're not used to being talked to that way. Because you're respecting their beinghood. And that's where I come from. It really works. Because that adult part of them wants that. It craves it. It's starving for it. That's why they hate it when you say, oh, you're not adult enough to handle this. What? It's like they freak out. It's like, what do you mean? I'm a kid? You bet. Adults handle this. You didn't. And I don't even have to raise my voice about it. Last question. What is 11 years old tells her mother to shut up. Well, give your husband my card. That's the first step. Or bring him in to talk about parenting issues. The deal is there are two aspects to that question. The first one's really simple. It's that my home is not your dad's home. We have different rules. And kids know that. They have separate clothes. They have separate rules. They know what they can do in dad's home. They know what they can do in mom's home. And you can say, yes, it is, and it's a drag, and I know it's really tough on you. I wish your dad and I could have stayed together and had a great marriage, but we didn't. And you're going to have to learn this. And it is tough, and I'll hold you, and I'll wipe your tears off when you tell me how frustrated you are that you can't remember. But until you remember, this is the consequence. Because bad behavior is not okay. You go, and the other thing is, the second part is, you don't deserve that. You can say to him, your father and you may like to be cruel to each other. Now, let me say something, because I say this to all the parents, and I want to say it here when I'm working with parents. I've done this for 20 years. I'm real fluent in it. I work right off the top of my head in a heartbeat. This is a new language for y'all. I don't expect anyone to go home today and say, okay, I have got it. We're going to have a homeostatic home. This is going to be great. I'm in. We're going to have a good home. It takes time because change doesn't happen overnight. This is a process. This is the beginning of your process. But you're not expected to do it overnight. But what I would say to him is, I don't deserve that. Your father and you are cruel to one another, and maybe that's okay in his home. And you are not okay to do that. And why are you so angry at me? I mean, think about it. If you told your husband, your wife, your friend to shut up, you are angry. What's he so angry about? Now, is his father making him so angry that when he comes home, see, the good and the bad news of being the empathetic, understanding, really caring parent, you get all the bad stuff. You get all the garbage. Because the parent who is, if you have an angry object and you're a child, you're not going to get angrier at that parent. They're going to go further away. I don't want dad going further away. He's already gone. I'm not going to get angry at him no matter what he does. But boy, when I come home to mom who tells me I can talk about my feelings, I can share my heart, I'm going to tell her to shut up because I'm angry. Dad pissed me off. So one of the things that I would want to do is say to him, what is going on with you? You know, if you're just learning that that's how you talk to someone, you need to hear that's not okay in the house. But you sound pretty angry to me. What's going on? Now, kids will say, I don't know. Bill Cosby does a wonderful thing. It's called On Himself. And he talks about, in the second half, about parenting. First of all, he talks about his wife. He said he had 5 kids. He said about his wife, he says, I have seen her job. I've seen what she has to go through, and I don't want it. The other thing he said was, children are damaged. They're cognitively damaged. You walk up to them, they put their Coke there, and you say, don't put your Coke there, and they take it up, and they put it back, and say, didn't I tell you not to put your Coke there? Yeah. Well, why'd you do that? I don't know. Before the age of 11, they don't. It is the age of the unconscious. And I talked about that in another talk. You can buy the tape at the church. It was called Psychotherapy as a Vehicle to Spirituality. And what I talk about is that the unconscious means that one is not conscious. Children before the age of 10 are not analytically oriented. They deal from the heart all the time. They don't know. They just react. So what I'd like you to do is teach your son, not invite him, model for your son what he can do with his anger. He can kick a pillow, he can go outside, or he can tell you what might be angering him. But if he tells you to shut up again, we are going to talk about what the consequence is for that.
Part of my question was, what is it?
What do you want? Right, so, right. See, you've already got it. You're already starting at it. What matches it?
Well, I'm asking you. I don't know.
Any guesses? Any guesses at all?
Yeah.
What?
It was actually something that he taught me. And he did something that was the third time. He said he learned a technique at school that he had to say 5 nice things about the person. And it just...
So maybe bump it to 10. Make him really deal with it. You know, maybe he'll say, Mom, I only had to do 5 in school. Okay, how about 7? Okay, you win. And they learn. I know I didn't mean to put you on the spot, but we really can come up with it if we think. What works for you? And then negotiate what works for them, and then find out what works. But I always like to bump the ante a little bit. You know, well, your teacher, but I'm your mom. You told shut up to your mom. I didn't like that. You know, so if you think a little bit, you do come up, because we're fair human beings, most of us. We want to be fair, and there needs to be a consequence. And they learn that. They will learn it by habit. Down the road, if you are consistent, they will learn this is the deal. It won't happen immediately, but it can happen down the road. Well, it's a little after 9. I want to thank you very much for coming and talking about one of my favorite subjects. And if I can be of help at any point, I am in the area, and I appreciate you coming. Thanks.
Thank you, Gary. And I'd just like to say that the sheets that Gary mentioned are back over there on the table. The tapes from tonight are available. And if you'd like that other tape you referred to, Psychotherapy is a Vehicle for Spirituality, you can order it. Just go up there and tell David. And he'll take your phone number and let you know when it's ready. We'll make it for you. And I think Gary's going to be here for a little while. If you want to talk to him personally, he's right there. Thanks for coming.